This interview is being conducted for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium Project Number AN08-NJ7. The interview is being conducted by Sarah Corbin.
James Rowan Sr. is assisting her.
Alfred Jackson is being interviewed on April 24th, 2012 at 1:30 in the afternoon at the Klawak Cooperative Association Council Chambers in Klawak, Alaska. Thank you for joining me. Can you start by telling me how long you've lived in Klawak?
Well, I was first showed up here in 1939. My mother, born out of my grandfather's, out of Carheen in March. My dad was trapping out there with my uncle, and they left my mother with my grandfather, Charlie Jackson, and our grandmother. We had a cabin out there on Texican Island. And in the spring, my dad brought me back to Klawak. That's where I first showed up in a birth certificate. It was it had to go on delayed certificates. They didn't, I wasn't born in a hospital. And I had quite a time getting that. You know.
And, what year were you born, did you say?
1939. Actually, I have to go by 38 because the census in 1940, that's when I first showed up in Klawak. It was taken in September of 39. Well, in September of 39, I was already over 6 months old, so they put me down at 1 year. Well, that when I got the record, they had to go back one more year. That's how I got born in 38. Oh boy.
Can you tell me about how Klawak was settled?
Well, there are different versions, you know. I heard the Keenas were the first ones here. Keena family, you know. Yes. And there is some evidence up from Klawak River. You know, Uncle Theodore was talking about, you know, that they lived, that our people lived up from Klawak River. On the right-hand side, there was some settlements there, houses, and you could see garden sites there. And that's where my grandfather, part of the property he had, was on the right-hand side of Klawak River, and it starts down close to the bridge and runs some like 570-some acres, and it shows on the Forest Service map. But I couldn't get anybody to take it. But this group here, I'll show you, it's right in today's paper. A big group I've been dealing with out of Washington, man, they're starting to really hammer. It's about time, you know.
What are the different stories that you know about people settling Klawak?
Well, over at Klawak Cannery, the one that was across the road street, I mean, over on Klawak Island, that was built back in, must have been, it was built after. The first one was built in, right there by the power plant. He said that was where the first, it was more of a salt creek. There's a little chunk of machinery there. And a guy told me that was where the first, it was like a little salt creek. But it burned down, so they moved it across the one that's across the bay there. And there's some old pictures of that. Yeah. You seen that?
Yeah.
Sure. Right? If you see that one, that was taken, he must have been up on the mountain. And he must have had a good camera because it shows that whole cannery and it shows. I'm surprised. And at that cannery site on the point, there's something like Uncle Theodore said there's some Chinese graves there.
On Chuck's Island?
No.
Over on Klawak Island.
Yeah, over at the old cannery. You know, they just buried them there. And that power plant, late Millie Chuck, he was from Klawak. And he found out he owned some like four lots over there on that little island, that power plant. And that power plant, I can remember running. See, they used it. They wait till, when it starts turning dark, they start it up. John Charles's father was worked as an engineer, you know, had a big crank on it, a big bar. They called it a breaker bar. He said he'd jump up there and crank it over. In the wintertime, they'd have to take a blowtorch and heat those glow plugs.
Oh, yeah.
And they start it up.
So the power plant supplied lights to and power to Klawok.
Yeah, and it's a big two-cylinder Fairbanks Morse, I believe it is. Yeah, it's the same as the one you see in Craig. You can see it down there by the power plant. You can see it right out of the open. It's the same thing, except ours over here. Okay, I could get her going again. You want to? I mean, Holy Bird told me. He wish he had time because he said I could get that going again. Okay, now, I believe what Clark Kennedy, was that 1924? Charlie Devers Kennedy? Something like that.
Somewhere around there, I believe.
Yeah. And Charlie Demert built a small pile driver. It had a four-cylinder Ford, like a Model A truck engine, and a little donkey on it. And you pull around the cannery inside there, and they would pull up the planks there, and they needed new piling, they just pull it up from underneath. And that's what kept that cannery up all these years. And a guy borrowed it about maybe 25 years ago and never brought it back. Down in Seattle somewhere.
What does Klawok mean?
Klawok? I never did get that down. Maybe Aunt Alicia, you know, she might have something there. There's interesting stories about that, you know. I mean, if you want to hear it, this Salvation Army minister was telling us, you were down in San Francisco, he went to this big zoo, and man, he went to the last section. He said, man, there was this big giant brown bear. He said, man, what a magnificent animal, caged up like that. He went over, there's this beautiful bald eagle in this big cage from Alaska. He couldn't really fly much, it's a shame to see such a thing. He goes over to this next one. The raven. The raven's sitting there real quiet. He looked really sad, you know. He said, Mr. Raven, man, how come you're looking so sad? All of a sudden, the raven said, locked up. Locked up. He said, man, you could talk. He said, where are you from? Klawok. Klawok. I tell people, those that are skeptical, that came from a Salvation Army minister.
Do you remember the boardwalks that were in town when you were young? Can you tell me about the boardwalks?
I remember the ones that ran along. There was one by Charlie Demmer, that big house.
Mm-hmm.
There was a boardwalk there. And then on the right-hand side of the road going up on the Totem Park,
mm-hmm.
there was a boardwalk there alongside on piling. I remember my mother died in 1943 from an accident. We lived down by the cannery. And I was only four. And my younger brother, Norman, was, you know, he was a year younger or so, and then we had a little sister. And Norman was quite a, remember him, he was quite a mechanic.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, a lot of people have said, man, he was always helping people. He was such a good mechanic.
Yeah, just about anything, rather.
He said, whoever asked him, he'd go, you know. Sometimes they'd take him, feed him dinner. He said a lot of times he probably didn't even get paid. You know, he just, he liked to help people. You know?
So do you remember when Bayview Boulevard was a boardwalk?
No, I remember the sawmill, you know.
The sawmill that was there at the corner?
Right over here where...
On Bayview Boulevard?
You see some of the machinery still down there.
Down here on the
yeah.
corner? Below the totem park?
Right here, mm-hmm. in that area.
Mm-hmm. Was that Demert Sawmill?
Yeah, I'm sure yeah. Demert built that. Mm-hmm. And but, my little sister was pushed out the dock there and drowned in 1949. She was just 6 years old. She was over an ice cream cone. She had this ice cream cone, you know, so I gave her. And this kid wanted it. And she started running, and he ran after her, and he pushed her, and she fell off the dock, and she drowned.
Oh.
What was kind of strange was that same kid, when he was about 20 years old, he was on power skates in front of him, and he drowned on a creek. But that Charlie Demers can we, you know, that's how they built most of these houses, I believe, and I think he must have built the sawmill before he got the cannery going, you know. He was quite an engineer. That big building right there, the next
door to us.
Smoke shop and all.
Mm-hmm.
Bunkhouse and kitchen was in there. You ever see that big oil stove there, that cook stove? Mm-hmm. That was about as big as a table. They said they could still use it if they wanted to.
I heard that he floated to start the cannery here, that Charlie Demmer floated the building down from Kassan.
Oh, Shakan.
Oh, Shakan. Yeah.
Shakan Bay, the old yeah. cannery there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, it was the some of the buildings, I think that's where that one came from. And that one was brought, that in the late one was brought in by the Evelyn Ray, which was Charlie Demmer's boat, which was a ferry, you know, back in 1950. And they had a boat named the John Connett. Named after one of Demert's boys. And that thing was built by Spencer Williams. And all that had was a, it was about a 48 foot V bottom, you know, to hurry up the hill. You needed for the cannery. And all it had was 110 Chrysler, but that thing was good. That's a boat around here.
So Spencer Williams was a boat builder?
Yeah.
That's...
He built several of them.
Sal.
Was that Sal's father?
His father or his uncle?
Sal's, was that his... Sal Williams.
Sal Sr. His brother.
Mm-hmm. Might be his father. That's, what is that, the other brother? Is that his brother? I think that might be his father, because they lived right down here by the sawmill.
Yeah.
That's where Sal lived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's Sal's father. And he was quite a boat builder. And that one big building there, I think that's the boathouse that the Billy and I was built in. They launched it, I think, in 1945.
Next to the Demert sawmill?
Yeah.
That's
the boathouse.
Was that boathouse, was that the Demert's boathouse too?
Yeah. And there was another boathouse. Where are we here? It might have been right along here. Because I remember my dad's boat, the Vigil, was shipwrecked in the summer of 42. And they took them a while to find it. It was up in Chipley Bay. It was a 35 foot sink. They use it for side rigging and also a troller. Really a neat boat. Jimmy Jimmy Rowan? No, Jimmy Rowan.
Yes.
He said that was his favorite boat. And then there was a new boat. He still talks about it. And when it shipwrecked, they brought it here to the boathouse and they redid it.
What sort of stuff do you remember happening along Bayview Boulevard when you were growing up?
I think that might be the Armor's house.
The Armor's house there?
Yeah. Robert Armor Sr. Robert Armor Sr. was, man, he had a powerful bass voice. And they said a group came here from out of Seattle or somewhere. They're touring Alaska. And they came out here and they heard him sing and they tried to get him to go with them, but he just didn't want to leave home. And they said he had such a powerful voice and so low, they said it could go 3 octaves below the lowest note on a piano.
Yeah. Goodness.
Pretty yeah. Low. There's some amazing people here.
yeah. So do you remember ever playing underneath the boardwalks or?
I remember playing under the sawmill.
Playing under?
Under the cannery.
Yeah.
And I remember that boardwalk on the right-hand side going up the Thorn Park. We used to play underneath there.
What kind of activities did people do on the beach here? Were they cutting wood? Were they collecting shellfish? Were they drying seaweed? What kind of stuff did people do?
Old school.
Yeah.
Right up. Is that it there?
Was it up this road?
Yeah, it was up there. Yeah, up in there. And it shows a picture in, what is that, Port the Raven? You guys mm-hmm. have that book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that one guy, he's blind, his name, real strong guy. It shows him carrying a block on his shoulder, and that block is almost around his
yeah.
He used to get firewood for the, he saw it on the beach and he carried up to school.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I know the exact picture you're talking of, I've seen it.
What was his name? People talk about him. Can't think of it right now. But he was a very strong. The word I got about that too was he got blinded, but you know that he was trying. His sister was with him, and he was trying to stare down the sun when they're little kids. Man, and it blinded him. I can't think of his name. They said he'd go trapping. He had this big, it was about a 20-foot plank skiff, and he was so strong, they said, my uncle, James Aniston, told me he had it there along the beach there by, in front of Joaquin, you know?
Yeah.
And even a low tide, when the tide went out, he'd be able to get that thing and slide it down to the water by himself. And that thing was the plank skiff, 20 foot long. And his wife was his eyes for him. He had a little outboard, and his wife would direct him where to go. You know, he'd run. I can't think of his name right now.
Do you remember Bayview Boulevard being built at all, or reconstructed, or any time that's water and sewer going in?
What I remember is the there on the corner, Sandpoint Store, Woodmark Store, and Woodmark was the one that had it by then, and that dock was there yet in 19, and the freight boats would come in there. And bring the groceries. And you know what, back then, it was, the first time I saw a small can of canned fruit was in 1947 when I went, went out to Skewell Bay with a guy in a children's home. I was about 7 years old. And we would stop in Steamboat Bay and he'd get some groceries and he'd bring back these small cans of fruit. You know, like, well, that's the first time I ever saw that. But we used to get these at Sandpoint store and Frank Prodovich's store and Bob Prodovich's store clear down the corner there. It's all falling down now. And yeah, these, that's how they bring the bananas in on the big bundles. I mean, tall of bananas, and they're almost as tall as the ceiling. And they bring them in and tie it up, and you get out your knife and cut out whatever people want. And talk about Frank Rodovich, you know, when he left here 30 years ago, he moved into Ketchikan. He called me up. I was coming over anyway, and he says, "Al, we're moving to Ketchikan. We'd like to sell our store to somebody here, but for $50,000, you know, everything in it, had the apartment upstairs." I told my wife about it at the time, and they said, "No, we don't want any time." It had one of these big grand pianos. You ever seen them? They're kind of a rectangular, the old thing. There was one old museum in Ketchikan like it. The thing they said was appraised at $50,000. And that Frank had one that was just as good as it. It went with the house. The house, business and all went for $50,000. Oh man.
Who bought it?
I don't know. Well, what happened was a friend of mine, he was an electrician, Carl Shank Jr., he came out here and he bought Frank's store. And he put about, must have put a couple $100,000 in that place. I mean, he made a big building out of it. Store and then a church, rented you upstairs. But then again, something happened, I don't know, politically or what. The banks didn't like him or what. I don't know exactly what happened. There was some, they shut it down.
When you were young, where did you and your family go to get your food at different times of the year? Did you travel around?
Yeah, my dad had that boat. And we'd go out to a first place we'd go to in the early summer was Hole in the Wall. Not out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you a story about Hole in the Wall. There was a lady here from named Cleo, Indian lady, and she ended up in Metlakatla. And her son died about 15 years ago, and she came, you know, for a funeral. And she talked about, he asked her, "Where were you born?" She said, "I always try to make it sound real exotic. I was born out of San Lorenzo Island." To us, that just Hole in the Wall. Some people talk about themselves as the Hole in the Wall gang. You want to hear a poem about Hole in the Wall?
Yes, please.
A guy named Gil McLeod was quite a storyteller. He even had a book called Gilbert Said. There should be some in Kowak. And he went back clear back around 1908 in his stories. He died about 25 years ago. But he was a good friend of my dad. But every once in a while he'd write a poetry for his friends. And one of those friends was Mary Ellen Canay. And he had a little boat named the Go Getter, a little double ender. And in 1971, I think it was, he ran into Gil McLeod out at Hole in the Wall. And Gil had his wife aboard, so they invited him over for dinner. Well, he had a meal with big dinner, and he's telling Gilbert about the fall before. He was trolling and chasing cohos over along the waterfall shore. And over there, there's a little beautiful little passage called Rocky Joe's. Only trouble is, when a big tide, fall, winter, southeast storm can come right off that mountain and come right out of Rocky Joe. Anyway, he told him, and he noticed Gilbert would write something down. And about 20 minutes after he told him the story, Gilbert handed him this poem. Old Hurricane Hall. We were fishing one day at a hole in the wall, when along comes the go-getter, Old Hurricane Hall. He got that name from a 100-mile blow the day he got caught at Rocky Joe. It blew so hard in that darn bay that it made old Lou get down and pray. He was in that window all alone. His only friend was his radio phone. Now he knew if he dragged through that gut, he stood a good chance to lose his butt. So he ran his engines. He ran it against the storm to keep from getting blown out. His anchor wouldn't hold. He would have to fight. But when his skiff capsized, he said, that's it. So he opened up his survival kit. He was cold and tired, but he felt no pain, for his survival kit was a squirt of green. He told me later to be prepared for a squall and always carry a quart of grain alcohol. By the keeper, old Gilbert McLeod.
Very good.
I heard Ben said that they could see old Louis, he had that, his survival kit back there in the cockpit every once in a while. Yeah, there's quite the stories about hole in the wall.
Oh, yeah. What was the name of that boat?
Go-Getter.
Go-Getter.
That was Louis' boat, and Gilbert's boat was named the Keeper. Which is a legal size key.
So, your family would go out to Hole in the Wall. What time of year would you go out there?
It would be in the early, probably May. When sea halibut will come in and spawn in early May. They go into sandy places.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy told me, an old timer, he gave me a hint on it. Fishing for halibut, go digging for halibut. These halibut are lazy. You go and look for an area where there's a lot of rocks and a lot of sandy bottom coming up to it, and find a little gully in the sand. Go out there and anchor about maybe 35, 40 fathoms out. You've got them. Just before change of tide, when the tide starts coming in, here they'll come. And I start catching halibut a lot better that way. And there's places around you like that.
So
Uncle Leonard told me too.
Folks would head out to Hole in the Wall in early May to start getting halibut?
Yeah, and then they'd and seaweed too, and seaweed's in what, May, huh?
Yeah.
So we had to be out there maybe early May, and then the halibut we come into shallow water, and we get seaweed in May too. And abalone, there was so much abalone out there back then, and they're commercial, kind of wiped it out. I saw an abalone, about that big, the shells, and I thought they came from California. No, they got it on the outside of Doll Island, commercially. They just about cleaned it out.
How long would you stay at Hole in the Wall?
Well, sailing started in July, so we'd have to come in before then. We probably could come in June, or mid-June maybe. And Hole in the Wall, you know, it's a beautiful place. You know, sandy beach, and they had cabins all over along that shore, but, you know, they're all gone now, and there's a rock there on this end. You know, you've been in the Hole in the Wall. There's kind of like a rock bluff there as you come in.
Yeah.
There was a stone carving there, I remember. And I was only about 4 years old, 3 years old, and I still remember that. My daughter, you know, I'll tell her all these things. And I remember my oldest brother's birthday, and that was before my mother died. And I was only four when my mother died. And my daughter, you know, pretty smart. She said, "Man, Dad, you know you've got this," and she mentioned this scientific name. "Your memory is..." I can't remember what it was now. I'm not going to tell a photo. My daughter's a pharmacist now, so she was pretty smart.
Do you remember what the stone carving looked like?
Well, it was flat, but I thought it was kind of big, you know, but then I was only 3 or 4 years old. So it's close to that rock bluff there, that thing there. And it was right at, it was around it in a high tide area. But you know, and the tides have come up high now, so I don't know if it's there anymore. You know, there's problems about some of those things, you know, walking off. And the Hole in the Wall was really a pretty interesting place. They've had fish finding scouts there that had freezing units in them, and they'd buy cold caught fish there. And their guys would go out there, some of our people, go jigging for halibut, and they made pretty good money with it. They were so good at it. Just out of a skiff. And I remember my dad and my grandfather George Aniskett, had a, they called them Point Baker boats. These was about an 18 foot, and it had a 7.5 Wisconsin engine. It was a round bottom boat, and they are really good taking the weather. You know, they're just a real good design. And there's a few of them around, and there's a guy in Ketchikan are starting to build them again. Say, what's the price of economy? You know, we'd like to go back to that.
So then you would come into town, come back to Klawock in the midsummer and go sailing.
Mm-hmm. And the Klawock fleet, I know you probably have pictures of a lot of the old boats. And my Uncle Henry ran the John Quinette for Charlie Demmer. I remember 1943 there about, I remember the sawmill, and he was running for Charlie Demmer County. Because in 1943, my mother died from fall. She was visiting a friend in September. It was real wet weather, and she slipped on the sidewalk and fell and landed right on a sharp piece of firewood. You know, it was split and ruptured her kidney. And back then, they didn't think of it. And now, they just operate and remove that kidney. But then, you know, they didn't think of that. They didn't have that. And my Uncle Henry took Charlie Demmer, told Uncle Henry and my dad and two other guys, "You take the boat over to Ketchikan, bring my mother back." This was in maybe late September. That was how they did it. And I remember that Billy and I, this was 19, year after my mother died, 44, that Billy and I was being built down in this big boathouse there, yeah. Yeah.
Down here at Charlie Dimmert's boathouse?
And the hull was too big, you know, they couldn't put the pilot house on it. They had to launch it and then build the pilot house. Billy and I were down in Craig at the dry storage. I don't know why he just sent an attachment to it. It sank and it's a big 58-foot sinker. Made of yellow cedar, I believe, and I heard there was a shipwright from Hoonah, probably the same guy that built that boat from my dad had from Hoonah, and also the Demmert that built the boat.
How did they launch it on the beach there? They just put log skids to? I mean, that's a big boat. How'd they get it in the water there?
Well, they built it kind of like a cradle. You know, they're piling and they just like a slide.
Mm-hmm.
And they block it up as they're building it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd wait for high tide and they'd slide it down, get mm-hmm. another boat or two or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and pull it out. As a matter of fact, he said to me, in Judson, Indiana, it was built and didn't have the engine yet, and you know, a new boat, all, and it floated so high. He said when they launched it, it flopped over on its side. So they had to pump a bunch of water in it and get it so it soaked up. But it was interesting how they did that. There was another boat house up in toward Canoe Pass. You know where Canoe Pass is?
A little bit, over on the way to Craig.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's interesting there, you know. Remember that time they had what was going on that time? The Heidelberg came over in a canoe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
About 10 years ago?
Presented us with that canoe.
Here they start coming through there, and Buster Nix came in his cruiser to keep an eye on a bunch from Heidelberg, and they stopped overnight on Fishshake Island. And they're coming through the pass, and man, there's a whole bunch of humpies there coming in.
Do you remember when you were little ever finding things along Bayview Boulevard, like beads or?
No, I didn't. I used to play along the beach.
Mm.
And our cannery house was down around this area. And there were cannery houses that Charlie Dimmert built. And then a mom died, and 2 years later, we were in a children's home, and then 2 years after that, Norma and I were sent over to Ketchikan. They closed that home down for some reason. They built it in 1945.
Where was the children's home?
In Craig.
Oh, in Craig.
Yeah, that's up there where Power is now. That mm-hmm. big building up on top of the hill, Power.
Mm-hmm.
That was a cannery house. And a guy named Sewell Manana. 1945, I got to tell him, he watched this guy bring this big building up the road from the beach. He said nobody would help him. That guy just came here. I said, nobody including you, huh? He wouldn't say anything. Then when he got it up there, and he had piling all in place, he pulled it up on there. A couple months later, he opened the children's home. Yeah. That guy kind of got beat red. I said, nobody including you. And I remember going fishing with Sewell, you know. I was only about 6-7 years old, maybe. And he was quite a troller. We'd go out to the wall. Quite the stories about that place. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a big, they call them devil fish. Octopus.
Mm.
And Ted Johnson, you talked about you know, a fish finds cow there, and he took a little skiff ashore. A while later, his dad hollered at him, "You stay there! There was something coming down the channel. A big, something was big, and then you didn't come out of water. You could see the big ripple of waves coming."
Yeah.
He said it was a big octopus. And years later, maybe 35 years ago, they said there was a big octopus grabbed a humpback whale, wrapped itself around, stopped up its blowhole, and he was suffocating it. And the sailors thought, jumping, that whale was just going crazy. Fish Bay, I don't know if you ever heard that. The legend of Devilfish Bay. There was a summer camp there, Indian camp, and there was a dog salmon stream there. That's out in El Capitan Pass. And they said there was a, it was known that a big octopus, the story about that on that pole. The pole was in Wrangell. I don't know how it ended up there. They made a copy, etc. And these two men and this young boy went and they had a canoe and they paddled out to beyond Chican Bay around there to get seal. They're out there for maybe a day or two and they came back and they got all this debris floating out of Devilfish Bay. You know, houses and stuff, small houses, summer houses. And man, he went in there and that the big octopus wiped out the whole village. And they told the boy, they made these two spears and they had knives. Which, and it mentions Camp Taylor, a mining camp across from Devilfish Bay. Closed down for years, but it was a mine. It mentioned the men at Camp Taylor. They went in there after. You know, the two men told the boy, "We have to get revenge on this monster, for that is the law of our people. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, which is the old law of Moses." They found six rock carvings out here on Prince of Wales that had the Star of David on it. Uncle Theodore told me that there's one on an island close to Kowak, and Ida told me where it was. So when we get a boat sometime, we'll go out there. Because, you know, you need to bring it in. If you're getting the AMB Hall in good enough shape, we could probably bring it in there. Because if it's big enough to carry, you know, people start, they taking someone off the backside of Wadley Island. There was some carvings up on that bluff. Oh, yeah. The guy told me it disappeared.
Yeah. Up in Little Salt Chuck, the tide comes out, some of the bigger boulders got petroglyphs carved on them. Yeah, I mean, Steve Langdon documented those and some of the other ones.
Was that man named Jumbo McPhee? The blind man? I think he was.
I'm not sure. It's been a while since I read that book.
Jumbo McPhee. But it's that picture, if you see, look in there, he shows him packing that block. I mean, it's a big block. He was an old man then.
Do you know any stories about Sand Point and what used to happen there?
Sand Point? Yeah, I'll tell you about the exact point itself. You know that Sandy Point there?
Yeah.
Oh, Thomas was telling me years ago, the Tlingits used to, what do you call that? Instead of burying them, they'll
cremate?
Yeah. Right on the point. They cremated them right there on that point. But they quit doing that. again. But it was interesting. But then Sand Point was built. Al Woodmark was the man that had the place. And he passed away maybe 25 years ago, or he moved into town. And, you know, things were so tough that, yeah, he took his family into town because he didn't have that good of a schooling here yet. And he took his family into town, you know, because they had better schooling than Ketchikan. But he was a pretty good fella. He built that house there, you know, that maroon one there where Vaughn's staying now. Mm. That's where he lived. Al Woodmark's family. Mm. You know, it's kind of like an old style house. You been in it? You know, it's like an old style house, you know, there's nothing elaborate. And that's where he raised. He had a pretty good sized family. I think Eric and I think one sister's still alive.
Did people whose houses were along Bayview Boulevard, the area in front of their house on the beach, was that considered their land too, and their sort of their front yard?
Well, they had use of it. You know, they had skiffs and things that they'd mm-hmm. bring in there all the time. Mm-hmm. And that little boathouse over here, you know, it had a railway down where they pull the boats up. Mm-hmm. So they had use of the tidelands. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, you know, we just had the funding. And I maintain we're going to have one day. You know, Alaska Natives, as they mentioned in the Bible, I got a 4-page report. It's in the, I have to redone their part of it because it says a generation of a man in Matthew. Jesus is speaking. The generation will not pass the rebirth of Israel. And the only thing I could figure is a generation of man of 70 years. That crowd in a sense is a pretty short time frame. From 1948, 70 years, what's that, 2018? Mm-hmm. There's a lot happening. A lot of people aren't paying attention, just like this don't say nothing about it, but Don Young. Something's gonna come out there. Hmm? I mean, big time. You'll see Alaska Natives will be brought back home. They got that message up at the Salvation Army about a year ago, and they had communion. Several churches were there, and they said they had a prayer meeting. And they received a message that God would bring the Alaska Natives back home before very long. I tell people to keep an eye on Israel because our people are tied in. The 38th and 39th chapter of Ezekiel tells you Syria, Iran, and Libya, and Gomer, which is Germany, and the House of Togomar, which is Turkey, will join Russia in war against Israel. The 39th chapter of Ezekiel tells you that army will be so great, it'll cover the mountains like a cloud, but God stops them right there. He rains fire and brimstone on them, destroys 5/6 of that great army. Tells Israel takes 7 months just to bury the dead. Who is that 6th army that is spared? Read in the 10th chapter of Isaiah. The Seventh-day Adventist has gave me a Bible. On the front page, it shows the United States under missile attack. I didn't bury far away. And that when God brings the last of days back home, boy, there's going to be a powerful lot happen. I met a prophet. Boy, he bought an amazing thing. He told me about 90% has happened in the last 20 years. He said God will be bringing us gold and silver to buy for our food, he said. He told me to get a detector. I'll bring it down here sometime. He said, you hold it like a pistol. Not like that, you hold it like a pistol. That was almost 20 years ago. I'm 15. I looked for 3 years trying to find it. I could not find it in all these gold. There's your catalog. And I just happened to be over here in my boat, and I went up to see Uncle Theodore, and I was telling him. I had coffee with him. He was a good friend of my dad's, and Alicia wasn't home. And I told him what that prophet told me about that detector. He said, just a second. He got up and went to his bedroom, and he came out with this little package. He opened it up, started putting it together. It was the very thing that prophet told me to look for. I located gold, the one I got, 3/4 of a mile away. I mean, that thing is sensitive.
That sounds like it. Well, so you've never found anything that might look like any of this stuff around Tlaloc?
No, not
maybe
not
or stone tools?
I've been thinking about it, though. Because get one of these, you know, the Russian trade beads, put that in that sample chamber, that's all you need to do is in that little sample chamber of that detector.
Hmm.
It's called a directional locator. You could put a dollar bill and it'll find hidden money. But you put one of these in there and it'll locate. Were these found here in Tlaloc?
Yeah.
Down by the...
This one says they've been
by the power plant?
Collected along either side of Bayview Boulevard.
Oh, what's his name? Over here. He was always looking on the beach.
Anyway.
Yeah.
You think people find them on the beach?
Yeah. But you know something? I knew this investigator in the Forest Service. He said, someone is bringing in trade beads in the Ketchikan. That was almost 20 years ago. He said, they won't put it out on display. And so we told him they were stolen from grave sites. He said the biggest one, the most expensive, was the blue. He said they sell for about $900 for a necklace. He said, you ask them about it and they'll take you a back room. And he said there was trade beads coming in from Texarkana, the old burial site.
So you think that the trade beads, that people would have been buried with beads?
Yeah. There was not.
Do you think when people used to be cremated, that would they have been cremated with things around their things like beads too?
I think so.
Yeah.
There are several places that they found them on the beach too.
Because
mm-hmm. You know, you can come in on these canoes,
mm-hmm.
You know, bringing things in to trade or.
Mm-hmm.
And no telling what, you know, happened there. Because out of car, he and this guy tell me that where my grandfather lived, that Blackie Neely's wife, he was a logger, she'd come out there and ask my grandfather if she could look for beads along the beach, and he'd let her do it.
So you'd find beads not just on the beach here in Tlaloc, but in other places. Find beads along the beaches.
So.
Mm-hmm.
You ever been into Shipley Bay yet?
Yeah, I've been to there.
You ever looked at that big rock, got carving on it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have some amazing places, you know, the carvings and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boy, that place used to be such a beautiful place because it had, you know, before they logged it. got a second coat now, but man, it's a beautiful bay.
Well, you've answered lots of my questions. That's pretty much all the questions I had for you. But do you have anything, is there anything else you want to share with me or anything you think I should know?
I've been in national TV for the last 3 years, 4 years. Bigfoot up in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And this little boy, I was surprised he could recognize me because I had my raincoat on, you know. The hood over, and it was raining. He stopped me last Sunday morning out in the alley, and he says, "Where are those upside down stumps?" I said, "Wonder what he's talking about." And I realized what he was talking about. I said, "Oh, that's way up Clock Mountain, about 2.5 miles up there." He was only about 9 years old. Kind of interesting. And you know, they've been showing that for 3 years now or more. I got a dinner out of it. I wonder what they get charged for that, you know? That Bob Alley, Dr. Alley?
Yeah.
He was one of that. He said, "Oh, we need somebody to go up there. You're a Kwakini shareholder, and they won't let anybody go up without a shareholder." So, okay.
What do you think those are?
About that, huh? Yeah, it's interesting, that little island. Man, those, some of those beads are pretty big, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And that little, where the power plant is, that little island there by the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
Theodore has a copper or bronze, kind of like a circle plate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And took it home because somebody's allowed to try to steal that, and it's one of the real early, you know. Because those things have a habit of disappearing, you know, walking out of here.
What is it?
I think it's a bronze marker plate. Maybe as big as that bowl there.
Yeah, is that the, did he take a picture of himself holding it?
No, I didn't.
I think it was like
one of his boys, that man.
40s maybe. Yeah. I think that was actually presented to him by one of the representatives or something. Yeah.
And Devilfish Bay. There was a man and wife that worked at the dockside about 6 years ago. They lived on a sailboat. They went in and anchored up. He said, just late in the afternoon, they could hear this pounding up toward the head of the bay, like something was pounding on a tree. And that's one of the things that these city Bigfoots will do. They'll take a down tree and just beat on another tree. And just a matter of letting them know, you know, up here, the other side of the divide, you know, going to Thorn Bay, mm-hmm. going north. This guy took his brother and sister out about a week ago, high country, and the guy went looking around. He said, "Hey, look at this. He found tracks. Snow was there, fresh snow. And this guy had size 14 boots. He's a big guy, and man, there was, those tracks were bigger than his boots." And he said, so they didn't shoot at them. He heard real quiet, and he heard this pop like a, he said, that thing stepped on a old rotten tree, and it stopped when it did that, and pop, and he said it, you could hear the air coming out of it, like, huh? You know? And that man, they just all sat there and froze, just waiting. And that's the place where a friend of mine goes. He said he's seen it up on it. Now Bob Alley has got him a camera, you know. Dr. Alley in Ketchikan has a book called Southeast Rainforest Sasquatches. And he's starting to put together another one. But I loaned it out, so I don't know exactly how you did it. I don't know if I would get it back now. Bigfoot is called Hootsman, Tlingit, meaning Hoots is bear and land is man.
Hootsman?
Hootsman.
And Bigfoot is known to be around these parts?
Yeah. There's several people who have seen them, but they just didn't have a camera on them.
Speaking of cameras, do you mind if I take your photo?
Yeah, okay.
One more. Thank you.
We are